Hey folks, it's Jeff Fuzzy Wenzel from the Woodshed Agency, and you are listening to episode 138 of Successfully Funded. Here we go. Let's turn it up. All right, crowdfunders. Hopefully you guys are all doing well today. This is episode 138 of Successfully Funded. I am your host, Jeff Fuzzy Wenzel from Woodshed Agency. And some of you might be asking, why do we do this sort of podcast? Why do we talk to project creators? Well, you know, my goal and the goal of this of these episodes is to talk to project creators while they're in the middle of a campaign. I want to know what they've done to become successful. What are they doing pre-launch? What are they doing currently? How are they raising the money that they need to fulfill their dreams and to get their business off the ground? And that's why we do this. That's why I love this. I love these conversations. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking with Sammy Laxo from the campaign Dale of Merchants Collection. So we're going to be talking board games. So, if any of you ever listened to me before, you know that I don't know a ton about board games. So I tread lightly and I swim in deep waters and I try to just just keep my head above water basically. But Sammy was great enough to jump on and kind of talk us through his game. And this is his third or fourth. So you know he's got a great collection going on, and this one was an intriguing campaign as well. So so that conversation is going to be coming up in just a little bit. But before we dive into that conversation, why don't I go ahead and give you a real quick crowdfunding power tip? Let's chat about a power tip for crowdfunding. One of the first things you should do before launching a campaign or even building a prototype or any sort of thing is do a buyer persona. Go through and really think about who is going to consume and purchase your product. There's a ton of tools out there. If you just Google buyer persona, you'll find a ton of templates and systems to do. But really what I try to find is I want to go and I want to list out, you know, five magazines that person might read. I want to find five Facebook things that they might follow, five Twitter things, five Instagram accounts, five Reddit forums that they might be a part of. I also want to look at where do they spend their money. So what I do is I like to go through and look at your bank statement and say, where do you spend $100 a month on? Where do you spend $200? Where do you spend $1,000, you know, a year on? And try to find what channels you're in, because if you are doing those things, the chances of your consumer doing something very similar for your product is pretty high. You know, if you are a parent and you made a product for kids, well, what are you reading? Because that's probably what your audience is reading. So don't overthink this audience a little bit as well. Like, don't think that they're going to educate themselves or they're going to dive deep into your content. But you want to be very focused as to who you're making. Because if you can identify this buyer persona, then you can make really smart decisions when it comes to marketing. So think about that before you go and launch your campaign. Look at creating a buyer persona. All right, successfully funded listeners, I got to go on a bit of a rant here. I kind of want to break down the last 4 hours of my day here. So this is currently Wednesday evening. It's about 7:20 at night. And we just got back from the doctors for my daughter. And I want to walk you through something that I am incredibly pissed off about right now. And instead of taking it out on my wife, I'm going to bring it to you guys and share my frustrations and share a little bit of behind the scenes of what it's like being being an entrepreneur in today's world and in this crazy effing world in a nutshell, right? And when things don't make any logical sense. So let's start off with this. So yesterday, at some point in the day or after dinner or something, my daughter got bit by a bug, and we saw a little scratch on it, and my daughter scratched it and whatever. It was a bug bite. And that turned into, like, you know, there being a pretty good red spot, like, where her whole foot and leg is swelling, or, up, you know, her shin down to her foot is swelling. So it's clearly serious. She went to school today. She had a fine day. We played on recess. She's walking. Everything's fine, you know, but we needed to go to the doctor. So, you know, she came home at school and we instantly got in to see our doctor. We go there and I noticed my wife's taking a while at the counter. She comes back and she's like, our insurance got shut off. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? Our insurance is off. You know, we don't have insurance all of a sudden. Now, my wife and I do, but my kids don't have insurance. Now, here's a little backstory on that. So, you know, being an entrepreneur and having a marketing agency, it's not as if that I'm running gigantic profit margins here. You know, so my wife and I both work for the company, and we are still under the minimum so that we qualify for my kids to have free insurance. And all you have to do is basically we pay like 10 bucks a month and they get insurance. So it's, I think that's Medicaid, I think is what that is. Or yeah, I think, or Medicare, whatever, whichever one it is. We have that, right? And we've had it now for a year and a half, 2 years. No, a year and a half. A year and a half. And it's been fine and almost every single thing is covered and we don't even have an issue. But we, every like year or so or 6 months, you have to prove your income. And we just did all that stuff. We just, you know, my wife and I just did this. We just went through all of our finances. This was like end of August. You submit it and you move on for the next, and everything's fine. We're still under the threshold of where you're supposed to be. And we're all, you know, everything's good to go here. Right. And no, we find out today by going to the doctors that no, you don't have insurance. Don't have it. They shut it off a couple days ago. But we paid for this month and we qualify. Oh, no, you have to talk to somebody. So even if, let's go with the scenario of that, that, you know, all right, we don't qualify, which we do. We didn't have some windfall of cash. So let's just theoretically say that we don't qualify. So then the solution is that you're shut off instantly, you know, by September 5th to September, today's the 12th, we're talking about, you're shut off instantly. There's no chance for us to even go get insurance. We're not aware of it. We didn't get notified of anything. Nothing's happened here. So now we're sitting here with, we're going to get a gigantic doctor's appointment visit, which we'll have to pay for out of pocket because we don't have insurance for the kids. My kids are going to go to school. If they break their arm tomorrow, knock on wood, God forbid, you know, they'll bankrupt ours. That's all that'll happen. You know, if something else happens before we, because right now we have to frantically in the morning call and get insurance for them while we go and deal with the government scenario and then hope to get all this money back at some point, which won't happen. So then let's continue this rodeo. So now we find that out. We go to the doctors and yeah, they've got to get some, you know, she's got an infection now in her leg. So it's serious. Like if this infection spreads, it gets into her blood. This is, you know, this becomes a serious, serious situation. So now we got to go get an antibiotic. So now we go over to CVS and guess what we don't have over there either? Insurance. So now we just dropped 80 bucks on something that should have cost, you know, nothing or $3 or $4, all based on probably some mother, you know what, making an error in an office or, you know, or we're just getting completely effing screwed. And I am so tired of this. My kids should be covered. My kids should have insurance. Otherwise, we would pay for it. It's not that we would. All right, I'll just add them to my policy. But we didn't even know. No notifications. Nothing. Just thank God we went to the doctor's day. Because what if we didn't go to the doctor's and, I don't know, we got into a car accident or something happened? My kids would, you know, that would bankrupt us. Literally, just kill us. You know, my entire life would be destroyed financially if something happened. And I'm tired of this stuff. This is a effing problem. And I'll put an explicit listen on this. So if you're listening to the car, sorry about that. But this is bogus. And this is what it's like being an entrepreneur. This is so nuts. Bad, 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 bad. I'm so fired up on it. This has been my last like 4 hours. And, you know, my daughter's nervous. I mean, it's just a bug bite. I get it. But it's not an infection. Ugh. So, all right, I hope you guys are comfortable dealing with that story. You know, we'll get it all squared away on our end. Everything will be fine. But right now, in the moment, I am fired up. So I'm going to unplug for probably the rest of the evening here. But I appreciate you guys putting up with me and letting me rant a little bit because I just didn't want to take this energy anymore into my house because I'm a ball of energy and nerves right now and I'm pissed. So, okay, thanks, everybody. All right, let's continue on with the podcast. All right, Sammy, I've hit the record button and we are jumping into a successfully funded episode. Why don't we do a quick sound check here? Why don't you tell my listeners what you had for breakfast this morning?
Well, I ate some bread, like I usually do. Sometimes I eat porridge, but today it was bread.
Just some bread? Anything
yep.
on that bread? Anything fancy? Just some butter? Butter and bread? No coffee?
Butter, cheese, and tomatoes.
Nice. See, that's fancy toast. That's not just bread. Awesome. Well, I think we're sounding good here, so why don't we go ahead and jump into it. So why don't you start by telling my listeners what you're currently raising money for over on Kickstarter?
So yeah, I'm Sami Laakso from Snowdale Design, and I'm collecting funds for Dale of Merton's collection, which is the third game in the series. They're all standalone games, and this is the third one, and it also includes a large box that you can store the whole series inside it.
Very nice. So you said this is the third set of this game, the Dale of Merton's games? It's a whole collection series, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So far there have been the original Dale of Merchants, Dale of Merchants 2, and Dale of Merchants Collection, which is now the third one in the series.
Nice. And were those other campaigns also funded on Kickstarter, or did you do those a different way?
Yeah, those both have been funded on Kickstarter as well. A few years ago.
Okay. What's the timeline between the games? When was the first game published?
It was like about 3 years ago, and the second one was about 2 years ago, and now we're ready for the third one, because there were a longer gap between this and the second one, because there was a new game, Dawn of Peacemakers, that I crowdfunded and released
that time,
which is right now on the boats and should be released in a month or two.
Nice. So when you kind of first started this series of games, did you have the vision that this was going to be a three-parter, or maybe even is it more? Is it going to be a five-parter? Like, is this the last of the of this sort of series of games, or did you have that in your mind that you were going to do multiple campaigns like this?
Absolutely not. The first game I did just for fun, so I could play my game that I had designed myself with my closest friends and family. That was all that there was to it. But people enjoyed my friend's success that maybe you should release it or ask some publishers if they want to do it. And here we are now.
Cool.
This is not the last one in the series. There will be at least a fourth one in the series as well. And the big box will have enough room to store that as well inside it.
That's great. So what do you look for, I guess, you know, when you're kind of working on a game like this, that, or what kind of started to kind of come up that you're like, you know what, we need to do multiple versions of this game. There's more to it. Like what did you start to see from the first version that made you want to make more of this?
So Dale of Merchants is a deck building game, and each game comes with a bunch of smaller decks, and each of those decks are designed and themed around a single animal. So for example, there are thieving northern raccoons who steal cards from other players, and then there are slots who are so slow that when you play a card for them, it actually gets resolved at the start of your next turn, as they're so mm-hmm. so slow. And you only use a few of those decks in each individual game. So there's a huge amount of variety based on which decks you include. And I always come up with new ideas for new decks. Mm. And that's why there's so many games in the series, because I always come up with new decks that are awesome to go and combine with the previous ones in the series.
Sure. How do you keep all of that gameplay organized across multiple decks so that there isn't a fall off, or there isn't like, oh, we use this one deck, it doesn't actually work very well with, you know, game three or whatever it might be, deck three or whatever. How do you keep all of that organized? Is it notes, or is it just, you know, just doing, being a good game designer? How do you put all that together to make sure all this stuff plays nicely together?
At first, you know, I did it mostly just how I felt that should be mm-hmm. appropriate for each card and each deck. But the more I have created the decks, the longer list of so-called guidelines or golden rules or whatever you want to call them, I have for each deck and each card. That's what I want the decks to feel like, what I want it to achieve when included in the game, and what the individual card can do, what the individual card should do, and mm-hmm. of course, what they can't do and what they shouldn't do,
right.
and all kinds of that. And for example, if a card is a nasty one that can be used to steal cards from other players, then that deck should have multiple cards of things of that sort. So there's not only one card that can be used to steal cards. There should be a bunch in a deck. Mm. But if some decks provide a lot of nasty interaction and some provide none at all, but there are no decks that provide just a tiny bit, because then only it can be that only one player gets access for those cards. So it should be that all players get access to the nasty cards, or no players get access to those kinds of cards.
And where did you learn like game design like this? Where did you pick up this skill set to build games like this?
Well, something that helps is that I have played games all my life, and that certainly helps a ton. Sure. And being a critical thinker helps as well. And just by trying it out. So this is not the first game I designed, but it is the first game that I designed in mindsets that I want this to be a great one. So before that, they were just some funny thought exercises mostly. But if you use plenty of time and write your methods down and playtest a ton, that helps. That right, helps right. greatly.
Right. Is there like a mentor or like a type of design that you play like? Is there other people like what you do in terms of like, you know, I sound like this guy in the music industry, so he's like, oh, I kind of sound like this or this, these two bands together. Is that same thing sort of for game design? Like, I'm in the style of these two or three games.
I'm not sure if there are any individual, it's like maybe a combination of multiple. So I like to create games that have a great theme in it. So the theme must support the mechanism, because that makes it easier to learn the game, easier to teach the game to players. So that's one of the things that I like to do. And other one is that I like to create games that have really simple and elegant rules, but a lot of depth between the interaction of those rules. So the complexity shouldn't come from the rules. It should come from combining different parts while you play the game. So it's easy to jump in, but there's a lot of depth once you are in the game.
That's cool. How many players for this type of game that you have here for Dale of Merchants? Is it four players, two player?
Dale of Merchants is for two to four players, so two, three, or four players. And there's a team rules as well for the four players, so you can either play competitively each for themselves or two versus two when you're combining forces with another player.
That's cool. That's very awesome. So when you start, I mean, I guess this would be for like the person who's just kind of maybe thinking about getting into game design and stuff. What is the first step? I mean, what is like, all right, I've got this in my brain. I think it would work. What do you start to do to start to put together a game like this?
If you haven't designed any games earlier, then I would suggest maybe trying some house rules or variants, or designing small expansions for your favorite games, just to get an idea what it's like without having to use without having to use that much time in it. And then if you feel like the game design is something that you really like, then you should start with a smaller project. So like, for example, I started with Dale of Merchants, which is a kind of small a card game, and only after that I suggest that you might want to jump in a heavier, larger game with more components and higher price point and things like that.
Sure. And do you like recommend starting off with, you know, like a, I mean, just a simple like print version of something, or just so that you can actually play it with somebody to get some feedback? And if so, how long is that sort of time frame does it take you to kind of put a game together, in terms of like, I got an idea, it's on a napkin, I've sketched it out, to I've got, you know, we've played, tested it. You know, how long is that usually, that process usually take?
I certainly recommend getting the game on the table as soon as possible. You can wander around and think about the rules for the game as long as you want, but it will never be ready until you have actually played the game. Mm-hmm. And you will figure out things that don't work with your design or your idea way sooner if you just get it table as soon as possible and to try things out. And for the time schedule, it of course depends a lot what kind of game you're talking about and how much time you're able to design and play test it. Sure. If you, for example, have a full-time job and so forth. So for example, for me, creating one medium to large size game takes about a year, including design, development, playtesting, illustrating, publishing, all of that. So it's a huge, huge time sink, and I'm doing it full time. If you're doing it on the side of your other job, and maybe you have family and stuff like that, so it will take a lot longer at that point.
And for this, how many people are on your team in terms of, like, are you doing the illustrations, or what are you working on particularly, as opposed to maybe some of the stuff that you've either outsourced or are having partners on?
Yeah, so I'm the only guy full-time at my company, Snotnail Design, and I do the design, development, playtesting with other players, other people, of course, and illustrating and publishing. I do have help for playtesting, as I mentioned, and then I have help for some of the story and flavor of my game, of my different games. All my games are set in the same world so far, the so-called world of Animal Folks, Deimuria, and I have a lot of help from different people who have been fleshing out the world and the different animals that inhabit it. Hmm.
What sort of has been the, maybe like the biggest roadblock over the last few years of you making games? Has there been something that you just couldn't do, or it just was out of the reach of where you were as a business yet? What's been like the biggest roadblock?
I'm not sure if I have had any significant roadblocks. Something that I can thank that for is that I have read a lot of about the industry and crowdfunding online. For example, Stamis Tegmar has an excellent Kickstarter blog on his website. And I started small with Dell Merchants, and then I have been slowly growing up the complexity and at the same time the price point of some of my games. So I've been lucky, and I have been investigating and reading a lot about the industry, so I have been able to avoid most of the big roadblocks.
That's great. And my follow-up question to that would be, what has been something that's happened that you just really knew you had something? What was the moment where it just all felt like, you know what, I need to go deeper down this, I need to make three versions of Dale Emergence? What was like the moment where you were like, this is really happening?
Well, the first moment was when I played the game with my friends, and they said, this is awesome, I think people would enjoy it. That was their first step in starting the business. Then the second one was that when the first Kickstarter got funded pretty easily, and as it was my first one, that was a really huge step. And sure, then the second crowdfunding campaign got funded in less than 10 hours or something like that. That was the point that I pretty much moved fully to creating board games. Until that point, I was also juggling between board games and my main job at the same time. And that was the main tipping point.
That's great. What was sort of the metrics you were looking at to jump into doing this full time? I mean, was there just a moment where you're like, I can obviously afford this to work full time at my own company here. I can continue to board make games. But how did you make that leap into to leaving your job to do this full time?
As you said, it's mostly when I can afford to do so. So that of course, before that, I thought about if I want to do it. And when the answer is that I like this more and I like my current day job, then then I try to make it possible. And once the Kickstarter campaign for the Dale Merchants 2 was as successful as it was, then I was able to make the leap.
That's cool. That's awesome. And where are you located right now?
In Finland.
Okay. What's the gaming scene like there? Is it a big, strong community? Is there pockets of people? What's the industry like for games there?
I would say it's pretty strong, and it's, of course, it pretty much pockets of people around the country. And one of the big and good things for myself is that people in Finland can speak and at least read English pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we don't have, pretty much none of the big hobby games are released in Finnish. So we play all our games in English. So that made it impossible for me to have one version of my games that I can sell internationally and here in Finland, because people are used to purchasing hobby games in English.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of like, I guess just, do you travel all over Europe to play this at all? Do you travel and show it off, or how do you get people to kind of play test it in your area? Is it just friends and family, or is it, do you have like a pocket of people that you know are mentors, or you trust their opinion? They're not just saying, oh no, it's great, you know, just to say it, like they're really giving you solid feedback. Like, how did you cultivate and find that community?
I mostly play test and with the local friends and people here in my city. Mm-hmm. And then I really trust their feedback, and I trust myself to know if this is any good or not. And I do travel around Finland to show off the game, and once a year I attend the Essen Spiel where I show up my new games as well. And that's mostly the advertising that I do myself. I don't have I don't have time to go internationally to multiple conventions a year, because I need to design and develop right. And playtest and sure. All that jazz. I don't have time to run around to different conventions all the time.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's flip over to the actual Kickstarter campaign, which is why we're talking today. So this is your third campaign, you said, correct? Is it third or fourth? Yeah. Third one?
This is the fourth campaign and third in the same series.
In the series, right. And, you know, we're talking right now and you've got 24 days to go. You've got, and I'm looking at in US dollars here, but you've absolutely crushed your goal here. You're sitting at $76,000 with, you know, over 1,100 backers, which is amazing. That's a lot of people wanting to play this game. So, you know, because you've done this before, what was the strategy for this particular campaign in terms of pre-launch, and what did you do to get ready to announce this project?
Well, first of all, I made sure that the game is as good as it can be before the campaign. There are mostly just illustrating left for certain parts of the game, but I made sure that the game is developed, fully playtested, and the rules are available. And I have also illustrated most of the stuff that I show on the campaign page, so it looks professional and nice. There are a lot of stuff that are incomplete, but I don't show those parts because they're not relevant. They're mostly right. Duplicates of the stuff that there already is. And I also reach to people that I know like the series earlier, and then I send prototype versions for them so they can cover the game. And one of the most critical things is email newsletter. So I have people who like my stuff subscribe to my email newsletter. So the first thing after I launch the campaign is I send out the newsletter to those people, letting them know that now there's more stuff to the series that you already know and love. Mm-hmm. So I get the big burst at the first hour of the campaign from people who are coming back to the series.
That's great. That's great. And was there any sort of, outside of like designing the game, just sort of metrics in general, was there any sort of metrics you were looking at in terms of making sure that you got a big burst on the first day? I mean, did you know your newsletter was going to produce certain things, or was doing Facebook ads, or was there any sort of, I wanted to get this many new email addresses for this particular part, or were you just banking on the success of the past two games?
Mostly the past games, and during each of those campaigns, I have gathered more and more email subscribers, and even between campaigns, I have a form on my online page where people can subscribe to the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And one small thing, or I should mention at least two. the first one was that I started a development diary a few weeks before the campaign launch on BoardGameGeek, where I tell about designing the game and introduce new and tell about the new stuff that I introduce in the game. And of course, once the campaign goes live, I will tell them that now it's live, you can go and back the game. And another thing is that there are a ton of different animals in the game, and I came up with an idea where people can access new animals to the game from their favorite, which they like. And I opened a voting system where people can access their new theater ideas. And that was also a few weeks before the campaign. So I got some talking going on about the game. And now during the campaign, the first thing was that they successed their animals. And now I have a ton of new animals listed. And I will pick 10 of those and for three different polls that I will run during the campaign, and people can then vote. And I promise that I will include the animals with the most votes into the game, and that's one way for me also to generate interest from people for the game, because that's one way. It's important that people can feel part of the process, and they can give input to the project creator.
Well, I think that's what I mean. I think board games do this the best out of any category right now on Kickstarter, in terms of giving opportunities for the crowd to basically participate in the project somehow. Did you have that going in? Is that always something in your mind where you're like, you kind of knew, I'm going to get great feedback, I'm going to do these polls, I'm going to get people to give me suggestions? Did you kind of always know that was going to be something that you would do?
I certainly didn't have that all the time, but I knew that I wanted some way for people to get excited and get involved in the campaign. And when I did came up with the idea of people suggesting new animals, which they have already done before this in randomly in forums and social media, where they say, hey, did you have these animals? I'd really like this. And then I thought that if they're doing that without me asking, how much will they do if I actually ask about those opinions from people? Right. So that was the main thing that get me invent this new system for Delft Merchants Collection.
That's cool. Now, are you focused a lot on social media, or are you more, since you're in the board game world, more focused on like the forums, board game, Reddit, or BoardGameGeek.com and Reddit, or are you still looking at Facebook, Instagram, and those tools?
I personally use mostly BoardGameGeek and a little bit of Twitter, but that's pretty much it. I think that some of the authors are pretty much a waste of time. Yeah. they can gather interest from people and stuff like that, but it's so much of your time if you try to concentrate on all of the social media out there.
And are you, like, do you particularly, how much social media do you do for your game off of when you're not running an active campaign? I mean, is it something that you're always producing content around it, or do you do like a big push around the Kickstarter and then you kind of die down a little bit and then, you know, go back and forth?
Pretty much the latter. I do a big push during before and during campaigns, and then I pretty much live low on between sometimes posting a little bit stuff, but not that much, because it takes so much time to actually do the games that I just leave their social media.
That's great.
On back burner when I'm actually doing the game, creating the games.
Yeah, you got to make the game. You got to make a great product. So with 24 days to go in the campaign, you know, what are you doing to just kind of keep momentum going, just to make sure that you're not getting, you know, a big trough or a lot of days without backers? But what are you doing just to keep that momentum going and just to keep all the energy up?
Well, as you can see, I'm taking part of these amazing interviews.
Yeah, outside of this one, you know, what are the other things you might be doing?
As I already mentioned, the voting polls, there will be one new bird to the game, one new mammal, and one new reptile, and those will be three different voting polls, which each of them will last for 1 week. And first of those polls will start actually tomorrow. And that's one way to have always new and fresh things for people to vote on during the campaign. Mm-hmm. And there's the different decks that I already mentioned shortly before. And this game will come with 8 new decks, and I'm slowly introducing those during the campaign to people so they can get excited about that. And I always ask which deck they actually want to hear about next. So I haven't set in stone which order I introduce them. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the things. And also there are new previews coming up even during the campaign. So the biggest previews are already up, and they were pretty much the day one, but then there are smaller ones popping up during the campaign. Mm,
that's cool. And are you actively trying to get reviewers or influencers in the game world to play this right now, or is that something you did in pre-launch?
That was pretty much pre-launch, because it's a good habit to give the previews, give people who preview the games at least a few weeks, if any way possible. A full month would be nice, to have them time to play the game before they have to do their content.
Right. So after the campaign ends and it takes whatever Kickstarter 10 days or so to put the money in the pocket, what starts the process? What happens after that point?
After the campaign, I will also start the, I spend way less time on the campaign and on social media and stuff like that. So I have more time to actually finish up the game. So the main thing is that I will have to illustrate a lot, because there are 55 individual character cards, which is a new thing in the Delft Merchants collection. Those are kind of like unique player powers that people will start the game with. And each of those will have a unique illustration, and I have not done most of them just yet. So I will mostly start illustrating a whole lot.
Yeah, right. And what about shipping and manufacturing? Is that stuff kind of already set in stone because you've done this before, or is that something you're still kind of working through?
I have the manufacturer and fulfillment center, all of that already ready and just waiting for me to send files to the factory, and then they'll start printing the game, and then I already know which fulfillment centers will handle the shipping, and all of that have already been planned and contacting them.
That's great.
Way ahead of time.
That's great. Well, Sammy, where can people learn more about your games and dive into your world and just kind of, you know, kind of take everything that you're doing in?
I have an active website, snowdaledesign.fi, and there you can find links to a ton of stuff all around the online world. So there are links to tens and tens of dozens of previews and reviews of different games, and there are links to the different development diaries that I have written on Board Game Geek and all of that. So it's a kind of hub where you can find links to pretty much everything that I have done around the games.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, everybody out there, I hope everybody goes and checks out Dale of Merchants collection over on Kickstarter now. You've got about 24 days to go here. Probably when I put this up, you'll have about 20 days to go. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. Sammy, this is awesome. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. And I wish you a lot of luck in the future, man. Keep going. Keep making games. This is awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's no problem. That's a great one. All right. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
All right, the song we're going to listen to today to finish out this episode is a song called Yesterday Superstar. I always have a special sort of love for this song in my heart. It really, to me, felt like one of my best work, right? My songwriter partner Jake and I wrote this with one of our singers named Unique from Chicago. And this song just always felt like, it just felt like it was one of the one. So I'm going to play it now. I hope you guys enjoy it. Have a great rest of the day, and I will talk to you all next week.
Mm-hmm. It's been 55 days and my phone ain't ring. Check my email and I ain't got a thing. yesterday's superstar. Oh,